è la tua. Cadela in tutto e che svano a incontrare tanto digna. Cadela in tutto e in sa Sardegna e spargite vela in alto mare.
Hi, this is Kenny Kramer, the real Kramer, and you're listening to WGXC ACRA. And as Cosmo would say, giddy up!
WGXE welcomes audio responses and feedback from listeners. Anyone can call and leave a message and we'll play it on the air. Call area code 518-622-2598 and leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay. That number again is 518-622-2598.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by The Highway Drive-In, a 4-screen drive-in movie theater in Coxsackie, New York. Information and schedule at HIWAYDriveIn.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of August Black of Boulder, Colorado. WGXC supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You, too, can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Meant to Ferment on WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM, Radio for Open Ears. My name is Rebecca Echevarria, and I will be your host for this show. This show explores all things fermentation in the Hudson Valley through interviews with practitioners and a bit of music inspired by their work. Today, I am super excited to have the founders of Yes Folk here with me, Yi Mendoza and Adam Elabd. Yes Folk is a small family-owned brewery and tasting room in Troy that specializes in kombucha and kombucha vinegar. Their barrel fermented beverages contain live cultures, explore the complexity of flavor in single origin teas, and often incorporate a range of herbs, botanicals, and aromatics. Visitors to their space can pair the tonics with small plates that pay homage to their respective Mexican and Egyptian heritage. But fermentation also permeates in a communal sense at the multitude of events organized or hosted by Yes Folk that seek to cultivate joy and express collective care for individuals near and far. From fermenting at home to producing kombucha sold at a national scale, Yes Folk maintains a deep commitment to their local roots and multicultural identities. In this discussion, we hope to explore how they scaled up production in a carefully designed space, what they learned and shared in unique collaborations with other fermentation-focused businesses, and why community remains the guiding light in their work. I can't remember when I first tried your kombucha, but I do remember being so excited to visit your new space, and I brought my mom along for the trip. And I have a super sweet photo of her having a flight of your kombucha. But I was happy to come up more recently for one of your fermentation courses on, and I learned a lot of great tips for kombucha making at home. So thank you, Yi and Adam, so much for being here. Before we chat, I have a couple of songs inspired by your practice. So right now we are listening to Acid by Ray Barreto from his 1972 album Head Sounds. He's an amazing Puerto Rican conguero and band leader. And Adam, as you spoke about in the kombucha workshop, for any listeners who are unfamiliar, kombucha is a fermented beverage made from water, tea, sugar, and SCOBY, or a symbiotic community of bacteria and yeast. And you can make your own SCOBY at home by combining raw, unpasteurized kombucha with a sweet tea mixture. And in the fermentation process, yeast consumes the sugar to produce CO2 and alcohol, while acetobacter, a type of bacteria, consumes the alcohol to make acetic acid bacteria, which gives the drink its sour and tangy flavor. Did I cover kind of the basics, y'all?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, hence acid in the song. But soon we're going to phase out and tune into Ya Ghazal by Sheb Hasni from his 1994 album Rani Murak. He's a prolific musician from Algeria. I was looking for a song about mothers, and my friend from Jordan, Mariam Hassane, recommended this one, as he is singing about how his mother taught him everything good in life. Mm-hmm. And Adam and Yi, for the SCOBY mother that you use at Yes Folk, you've had it for quite some time, no?
Yeah, we've had it for, I mean, the same culture has been going continuously in our brewery since 2016, late 2016, early 2017. Yeah.
Okay, so we're going on almost 10,
yeah.
Wonderful. And also you refer to your space as motherland on your website.
I like to say that it's the motherland, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, the space that we have now, we really created to just give more context to our offerings, and I say that it's like the habitat of where all of it comes from.
Beautiful. Yes. So here's to learning from our mothers in all forms. Alrighty, so up next we have El Microbito by a Mexican band, Phobia, from their 1990 album Phobia. It's sort of an intense love song, but kind of cool. He's singing about wanting to be a microbe in someone's body as an expression of that love. So in light of the love and microbes present in your work, we have El Microbito.
Quisiera ser un microbito, habitar.
Alrighty, we are back here with the founders of YesBook, Adam and Yi. Thank you so much for being here today. How are you both doing this morning?
Great. Thanks so much. Thanks so much, Rebecca. This is so sweet and so much fun.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be able to talk with you both. I like to start off with a conversation with what the word fermentation means to you. In any sense, how you'd like to interpret it.
In any sense. I like to think of it as like from like the fermenter's perspective. Fermentation to me is a transformation of a food that yields favorable results. So that's also led by microorganisms. So microorganism driven transformation of a food with favorable results. Meaning that
you like an acronym, you know, for that.
Yeah, really. Well, it's really like, it's so subjective, because if you get some fresh cider and it's in the fridge and it starts to get alcoholic, then you could call it spoiled cider, or you could call it successfully fermenting hard cider. And then it follows that if you're making hard cider and it starts to turn into vinegar, then it could be spoiled, or it could be successfully fermenting cider vinegar. Mm-hmm. So it really depends on like if you wanted the thing to do it and what you wanted it to do. And yeah, that's sort of like from the perspective of somebody making something or doing fermentation. I feel like that's how I think of it. But obviously fermentation is like a wonderful word and concept, and that there's so much more, there's so many more layers to the meaning and how you can interpret it and how it can relate to how people interact with each other and how communities, you know, interact. And
Yeah, it used to be like when I saw the author of this new book called Deviant Matter, Kyla Wazana Thompson, speak, I think she spoke about like how ferment used to be kind of in a radical sense, or like when workers were protesting, or when there was kind of, I don't know, some outrage or, yeah, and how the literature would talk about it, like there's a ferment. Or,
Big time.
In most of our conversations on this show, talking about it in more of a food and beverage perspective, but there's a long history of, how it can kind of relate to the collective.
For sure.
But wonderful. Yeah. So, and then in my research, I read that you both met while working at a medicinal herb farm in Southern Oregon. And I was curious whether your experiments in fermentation together started there, or was it later? I also read that you moved to Southern California. So where did that kind of initial start begin with you both experimenting, fermenting together?
Yeah, definitely we kind of like arrived at fermentation and being excited about fermentation through herbalism and through learning, just all the natural ways of taking care of yourself and taking care of others, through natural medicine. And I think it was part of that training, but, you know, once I kind of learned those vocabularies and like that was like a genre of study, you start to look back at your own like history in the kitchen and the foods and traditional foods in your own home and realize, oh, this was fermented. Oh, this was a fermentation. And realize like how much of just both of our own upbringings had so much fermentation, those processes. We didn't necessarily meet there, but that kind of brought us together.
Yes.
This kind of like training that we did. And mostly it was Adam who was kind of getting really deep in doing educational programming and writing and teaching workshops around fermentation. And together we, Adam is the scientist and I'm the artist, and that kind of works really well for this project that we now have.
Yeah, the place that we both spent a lot of time in Southern Oregon, at the herb farm, you learned a lot of traditional herbal medicine, but you also, there was a little bit on fermentation. But I was really switched on by that. Yi had been there the year before me, actually, and I was really excited by the fermentation part. And for a few months, maybe it was 6 months, I was kind of traveling up and down the West Coast, and I spent a couple months doing this herbal internship program. But then I wanted to do fermentation, even though I was kind of living out of my car, visiting friends. And I was like, I remember I was making hard cider in a carboy that, and this was in like November, December. And so at night, whoever I was staying with, I would bring the carboy of cider into their apartment or house where I was staying. And then I also was making like a kimchi at the same time. So I was driving around with these actively fermenting,
potentially
things.
Explosive.
Yeah. And like making sure to like burp. Yeah, exactly. Making sure to relieve the pressure every, you know, couple hours of driving or whatever. But when Yi and I got together and started living together in 2012, mid 2012, our little apartment in Riverside, California quickly turned into just a full on like fermentation and herbalism. I mean, we had herbs drying, hanging, or like on a tarp on the floor, we would be drying large amounts of herbs, but then we had so many different ferments going. And we, that just sort of like carried through everywhere that we would move. We moved a lot early on, and we would like take all of our ferments with us, including, I'm remembering, a batch of date wine that we made. One of Yi's uncles, distant but not too distant uncles, works on a date farm in our date orchard in Southern California, and he just gave us like a couple boxes of dates, these really fresh, delicious dates. And so because we were fermenting everything, we made this, these medjool dates, and we made this date wine that we ended up moving with to LA, and then from LA to Long Beach, and then from the place we were in Long Beach to another place in Long Beach. But the initial primary fermentation had happened in our apartment, like in late summer in Riverside, when it was like 110 degrees, it felt like, in the apartment. So that it was a really hot, kind of gnarly ferment. Not so much gnarly as in off flavors, but it was like really sharp and not
really alcoholic.
Really strong alcohol, and just felt like it was so intense. And it wasn't until, you know, 2 years later when I was like, all right, these carboys, we need them for something else. We've moved this date wine with us for 2 years over like four different apartments that we lived in. And then I opened it getting ready to pour it out. But always, as always, you know, prepared to taste it and make sure. And it was actually really good. And that couple years of travel was all that it needed to kind of chill out. And
it smoothed out a lot. It was really nice to drink.
Yeah, it turned into something delicious. But yeah, so that's just been like kind of, it's always been something that we've been doing. We do, I think, a lot less home fermentation now that we're like doing it on a larger scale, because if there's something we want to make, we're like, okay, well, let's make, you know, 5 gallons of sauerkraut instead of making a half gallon jar worth, because then we'll have enough to share with community and share at the tasting room. And so we've kind of like moved a lot of our fermentation practice to this facility that we now have that's like actually made for it. And it's been really exciting and also like enabling in different ways to have space like that.
Yeah.
To work with.
Yeah. No, it's a gift and mm-hmm. like a blessing. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's wonderful to think about like how the memory and time have like, I feel like it came up in kind of both of your responses, and also thinking about like, yeah, the ferments traveling with you on each of these like junctures, and how the kind of parallel experiences of like your own experimentation fermenting and the microbes kind of doing their activities and seeing this kind of, yeah, relation happening on mm-hmm. similar timescales, but mm-hmm. different experiences, obviously. Mm-hmm. But so in that initial, those initial, when did you, do you remember like the first time that you combined kombucha with your herbalism work? Did it come in, I assume at that time when you were drying at home and had all this kind of abundance available to like, what was that initial spark to be like, oh, maybe kombucha with the herbs will kind of produce something interesting? Or did it maybe just come about naturally in all of these processes of experimentation?
I think it was pretty early on when we were making ferments for ourselves in our home that it was, it made sense, because fermentation unlocks already a lot of nutrients and some of the benefits of foods and, you know, vegetables and plants. And so just thinking about taking like the herbal therapies a step forward. But when we started putting out like our product as Yes Folk, we really honed in more on like the single origin teas. Mm-hmm. And that first series, the single origin series, was something we really focused on in the beginning. It wasn't until we had worked with those, with that series for a bit, I think, that we felt like our process, and also like folks trusted what we were doing, and we trusted ourselves also to make something, to combine the function but also make something flavorful and in line with our kind of simple and clean taste in the single origin series. And that's when we, that's when we launched the plant therapy series, which is the series of kombuchas that start off as a single origin tea-based kombucha, and then we infuse botanicals. Mm. We got pretty comfortable with it, and it kind of just like came naturally. Really is more just about kind of on a conceptual and like scheduling what kinds of formulas we're going to release when and for what function. But it's been kind of a really natural, it's just kind of part of the way that we interact with herbs mm-hmm. and with fermentation, that it feels natural to just like marry them.
Yeah. 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 I was curious about that series, the plant therapy series, and how you, I don't know, balance like the flavor and function, or is it kind of, what are you driven, maybe both of them concurrently, or as you said, it's kind of like a natural evolution mm-hmm. to combine those two components. But yeah, if you could speak to that, of the initial spark of how you're, I have this tea, what am I thinking about in terms of the herbalism world? Or I have this herb, what am I thinking about in terms of the tea universe?
I think for that series, it can come from different angles. The formulating kind of comes from either, here's a collective experience that we are tuned into because we are also collectively experiencing with folks, and it's something that we want to address, whether it's seasonal, whether it's something that is happening on a wider cultural level, on a worldly level, For example, like during the pandemic when we were all, and maybe continue to be very, you know, our adrenals and our nervous system very exhausted and very, so many unknowns and so much stress, we really felt like we needed to lean into a few formulas that addressed the nervous system and kind of like helped to mend and chill us out and relieve some of that. And so then knowing that that is what we're trying to address, then we formulate with, you know, kind of our repertoire, or like vocabulary of plants that we have a relationship with, and put a few of them together and make sure, you know, also like the balance of different notes, like there's always kind of an earthier, like kind of baseline, then there's always something in the middle, and there's always like a bit of a high note that's kind of like an aromatic or kind of gonna stand out a little bit more. So that's one approach. The other approach might be, yeah, that we have a relationship with an herb, and we want to highlight it, and we want to offer it in a way that like might, it hasn't been offered in a drink, in a kind of a, I sometimes I say casual, sometimes it's more just like, really the word is approachable, to like make the herbals, herbal medicine and these therapies more approachable to people. You know, like you can open a can of kombucha and drink it, and like you're going to feel the effects, and you're going to, it's subtle and it's light, but it's there.
Yeah. Thinking about it in so many different scales. And I feel like bringing in kind of the collective energy and then kind of harnessing the knowledge and experience that you have in your practice and then offering that back out. It's kind of a, yeah, beautiful reciprocity to think about. But for folks who are just tuning in, this is Rebecca Echevarria, host of Meant to Ferment on WGXC 90.7 FM, ICRA, speaking with the founders of Yes Folk, Adam Elaubd and Yi Mendoza. It's a small family-owned brewery specializing in kombucha and kombucha vinegar in Troy, New York. So you have this start in herbalism. Your experimentation is growing and growing and growing. The lab is extending out. And you moved to New York, to Troy. I saw it perhaps in 2016. You have a pop-up. You then start production in a rehabilitated church in Troy in 2017. And then in 2023, you built out a production space and tasting room in your current location. And I assume that was a quite different consideration than your experiments at home. And I'm curious to hear about that process. I mean, when we had a conversation previously, you had mentioned there was no blueprint or map of how to open your own kombucha brewery, perhaps. And yeah, just thinking about the considerations of that, perhaps also from a fermentation perspective.
Yeah, just even to fill in sort of the early parts a little bit more.
Sure.
When we first moved out to the area, we actually first landed in Schenectady.
Okay.
And we were there for a couple years, and we kept making things and sharing things with people, and we found that like several friends of ours who also had small businesses, mostly in Troy, were excited about what we were making, and they were like, oh, if you would wholesale this to us, we would sell it here, you know, we could have your kombucha in our restaurant or brewery or coffee shop. And so we felt like there was good potential to share. Nobody else was making kombucha in particular in the capital region. And so we reached out to Yi's two brothers, her older brother Frank and her younger brother Javi, and they came out. They moved from Oregon and California respectively to come live with us. And we really found it and built it up together. And really the whole process from the beginning was one of like, okay, we're making two jars. All right, now we're making four jars. We need a bigger pot. Okay, now we're fermenting in an oak barrel. We need an even bigger pot. And as we, every time we would like take a step in growth, we would have to sit and kind of troubleshoot how to make it work, how to make it still delicious, and but also like how do we move more liquid. None of us had any experience working in like a commercial brewery or anything like that, so it was like, okay, how do we move the liquid from this vessel to that vessel? And so Frank and Javi and Yi and I would just be, you know, trying to figure out how to do things, visiting other breweries, cideries, distilleries, wineries, meaderies, people who are working with liquid and learning from them. The thing that you mentioned about there not being a blueprint was like an interesting challenge, because if you want to start a beer brewery or a winery, there's so many books. There's like volumes and volumes of books of like, this is how you do it. And that's really helpful. But also you end up potentially inheriting other people's constraints and or bad habits. And like potentially like a lack of creativity in certain areas where like, oh yeah, this has to be done like this and there's no other way to do it. So that was definitely one of the benefits to us sort of, I don't want to say reinventing the wheel, but for a lot of things, it kind of felt like we were, you know, sort of grinding towards solutions. Some of which, like the first time we got a pump, it was a tiny little pump, but it still was such a game changer for us from when we would fill up buckets or 5-gallon Cambros. And yeah, like you mentioned, we were in the basement of what was a deconsecrated, I think it's called, church from 1891, and so we would have to, the kitchen was downstairs and the fermentation room was upstairs, and we'd have to carry these buckets of liquid up and down, and it was so much work. And the first time we had a pump, it was like, wow, we should have done this a long time ago. So there were definitely things that maybe if we would have had the experience, or if there were sort of like a playbook, we would have not done the hard way for as long. But also we, you know, didn't, and in a large respect, I think that it still holds or still stands with how we do things, is we're not assuming that something is or isn't possible because it's not done or it is done by other people. Like there's no sort of like, and I think from talking to other kombucha brewers who are fermenting on a commercial level, what I've gleaned from how they do things is that it's all very different. Like, and it's like that with other fermented. I mean, if you go to two wineries, you could go to two wineries that are super different in how they function, but it kind of falls into sort of like some major categories with something like wine or beer, where like, okay, either you're kind of making wine this way or that way or that way. With kombucha, it's because many kombucha breweries have done the same thing that we've done, which is figure out their own way, their own path, kind of from scratch-ish. There's a lot more variation in how people do things, which is great.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it does create like the amount of creativity that's possible when you're not given set instructions is interesting. But then I guess, like you mentioned, it can be a balance once you realize that the tools that are available could potentially radically shift the ease of production.
Definitely.
But it's interesting to hear also that you visited these other spaces. It's kind of like getting a sense for, also in particular liquid, because liquid... Mm-hmm. And especially when you're talking about fermentable beverages, it's just, I would assume, a different set of considerations than when, like, you're producing sauerkraut to scale or pickles to scale. Like, liquid in the form that it is, yeah, can pose a different set of decisions to be made about
yeah.
it.
And there's more, like, there are tools that if they work, there are tools that if they work for beer or wine or soda are going to work just as well for kombucha, because it's like
yeah.
not liquid specific, like a pump is a good example. And there's yeah. different kinds of pumps, and depending on, you know, wineries might like to use certain kinds of pumps more because there's less oxygen exposure or this or that. But for the most part, you know, there's crossover, all the tools that we have, except for a couple things that we had custom made, but all of the tanks and everything that we have are more or less adapted from other types of liquid production. Mm. We didn't like fully reinvent the wheel with that stuff, but but there are things that are different, like the oak barrels that we get made by Adirondack Cooperage, and they're not quite as far up north as they were before. They moved a little bit farther south, but when we used to get barrels from them early on, we'd drive up to Remsen, New York, which is north of Utica, and we developed our own sort of like toast profile with them. And instead of making the barrel with two heads, they make it with just one head, and then they don't drill the hole in the middle the way that barrels usually have, because we drill our own hole in a different spot. And so it took some dialing in, and but in the end, you know, the barrels are the same barrels that would be made for beer or for mostly for wine and spirits. And that was actually a friend of ours, Raphael from Enlightenment Wines, was the one who really early on when we were still fermenting in glass, and we wanted to use bigger vessels, but glass gets really unwieldy and actually kind of unsafe when you have really big glass vessels. If they break, it's dramatic and potentially injurious. But he was like, oh, you should just ferment in oak. They do all their fermentation in oak over there. And certainly at the time they did. And I was like, I don't know. I'm kind of nervous to work with oak. What if you get it wrong? What if you mess up? And he was like, oh, it's not that bad. And he gave us some like tips and pointers for how to work with oak and made a good case for it. And so we got a barrel, and I immediately really loved the kombucha that was fermenting and coming out of it. And then we got two more, and then I think we got three more a few months later. And at one point I was like, oh, I'm going to go get six for this next batch. We would order them like every few months. And I ended up having to remove like an interior panel from our little van that we had. We had a little Dodge Ram Promaster City, and six barrels was just barely too much for it. I had to like take a little piece of panel off to make the door close. But
probably maxed out the weight.
The weight probably wasn't too big of a deal, but it was it was bulging.
Yeah.
I felt like we were bulging.
But, oh, gosh. Yeah. The van, the barrel van.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I researched the barrel company that you use a little bit. And I love, like, also the combination of craftsmanship. Like, when you're able, like, you as creative practitioners are able to partner with these barrel folks who are definitely creative practitioners. And also they spoke about when they were starting their barrel company that they had very few people to ask of how do you make barrels. They said there was one kind of master barrel maker in the United States at that time. But, you know, this is just one of the collaborations that you've had. I mean, they are also kind of a fermentation-focused business, but you've had, over the years, many collaborations with beer breweries, sake breweries. I was interested in hearing about, like, what was it like to combine different fermentation skill sets, and maybe if it changed how you approach your practice.
Yeah, it's always so much fun to do a collaboration with other fermenters. We've actually have never done a collaboration with other kombucha fermenters, because it's
yet.
It's yeah. yeah, it's fun to come to the table, to come to the creative table, and like you just see how the different approaches are, and never really knowing exactly what is going to come out of it, but just being equally excited about each other's work and our projects, and knowing that like there's so much to learn. There's always a lot to learn from the folks we collaborate with, and it's always flattering and beautiful to see them also like come out of the process, like having learned something from the way that we approach making kombucha and working with tea and herbs. I think that has been just some of like the most exciting collaborations, is like we don't exactly know what is going to happen, you know, but just like fermentation, like something is going to transform, and in the end we trust each other that like we're all like just geeking out around the table and like tasting things, and you know, and then usually we wait a very long time before that product, that liquid is finished, and then the just the celebration of like tasting it and being excited that we made something together is always just like that feeling doesn't ever stop being like fun and rewarding.
Yeah, definitely. Because sometimes you're waiting like over a year. Mm-hmm. I read with one of the beer breweries, you're waiting over a year to see what went on.
there's been a few things that have already come out that took a long time aging and or fermenting before being released, and there's more also to come. It's definitely, it's like Guy was saying, it's fun to play and share ideas and cross-pollinate with other people who we love and respect what they're doing and what they're making.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I saw that you had, your most recent one was with Go Mushroom, I think, in Hillsdale.
Released that. Diamante, it's with chaga mushroom and mace and Eleuthero or Siberian ginseng. And that's been a long time coming. Devin from Tivoli Mushroom and Go Mushrooms has been a friend and co-fan. We've been like loving his mushrooms, and he's been loving our kombucha for many years. And whenever I would deliver down in Hudson, when I used to do all the deliveries, I would always stop by Tivoli Mushrooms and trade mushrooms for kombucha, and their mushrooms are just amazing. And with Go Mushrooms, the mushroom extracts and all the mushroom stuff they're making is so good. So that's the first of many mushroom. Yeah. Actually, the first we did a one-off keg of a sort of like what do we call it? We called it Petal Powerade. It was a kombucha that was made for our local Troy Social Cycling group.
Yes, tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow the social cycling group meets at our place every first Tuesday of the month, because it's a weekly like social ride. But once a month it ends at our brewery, and during the winter we were doing these like indoor races, and we had a blender bike, and it was just like a fun way to keep getting together even though it wasn't riding season. But we made a kombucha with a bunch of herbs that are like either high in electrolytes or are energizing in different ways. And one of the things we included was some cordyceps extract from Go Mushrooms, and everybody, that was sort of like a tasting room social cycling exclusive little thing that we did, but it was fun, and it got the wheels spinning. So we have some other recipes that we've put together that are going to include medicinal mushrooms that we're excited about.
Cool. Yeah, I can speak for all. Yeah, we can't wait to see in the works. But your mention of the Troy Social Cycling Club, and that's just one of the many events, gatherings that you host in or organize in your space. I mean, in just the last month, you've had fermentation courses on kombucha and the basics of fermentation. You host a tala and tea every third Sunday of coming to play or learn backgammon. And I mean, just so many things happening, so much activity. And I think there are, you know, businesses that do primarily focus on making a profit, which is totally understandable. Like you've written, we live in a, capitalist world for now, but community, just the emphasis on community is so clear when you're looking at what you do. And yeah, I was curious about what oriented you to that, or how did that come? Was that, again, just kind of an organic evolution, like you said, with incorporating the herbs, or was it this more, intentional direction that you said, this is how it will be?
We've been, I think, one of the main things we were excited about this space was to have a space that we could have people in and host people. And we did a good bit of that at our old space, but it always felt like we were working against the constraints of the space, and that we weren't really always in harmony with the space. And it was also kind of off the beaten path. Where we are now is just right, south of downtown Troy. And so it lends itself to it more. And it's just the thing that always feels the best is just being in community with people. And we don't do like a weekly trivia night or like the kinds of things that lots of places do. I feel like it's just like it'll be something that we're excited about, something that we're already doing. We were going on the Troy Social Cycling Rides, and it was like, well, y'all can come here. We can use the space for that. And that's really how it's been. It's been things that we're excited about, or people that we're in community with are excited about. It's definitely like a tricky balance for sure. Like you said, we do live in a capitalist world and society.
For now.
I like that for now part. But I think the feeling is like, life is hard. Small business is hard for sure.
Absolutely.
And if at the end of the day it's hard and we're struggling, but we did something really cool with our community that we can feel really good about and that we can look back on later, who knows what the future will bring, but at least to feel like we filled our days with community and with doing good with and for our community, then it feels like, what more can we really ask for?
Yeah. We need that now more than ever.
Yeah.
We always need that since ever. Yeah. I'm not sure.
For real, one. Yeah, for sure.
I think it's a part of who we are as folks who we love to host and we love to be around like our people, but there definitely was a lot of intention that went into the space around this when we were creating the space, this new space, designing it, building it out, knowing that we would have like a public facing tasting room and we'd be able to have that connection again with the public, that the space itself needed to represent like our cultures, and it needed to be a home for folks who, like us, maybe were seeking something in a space, seeking warmth, seeking familiarity, seeking familiar sounds and flavors, and the music we play, the tasting room menu, it all reflects that, and so does our programming. The events that we have and the things that we say yes to are to try to foment that culture and to offer the space. It's such a privilege to have space. It is such a privilege to own space and to, you know, to say this here is mine, even though none of it is ours, you know.
The bank owns it.
Yeah. I mean, just to claim, because we don't claim anything. But it's the only reason we felt like encouraged to go after that is so that we could share it, because it's like a home that doesn't have, you know, visitors and family, and like warmth in it is like, is that really home, you know? So yeah, for us, it's like what we have is always to share. So that's the space, the time, the effort that goes into the offerings. Mm-hmm. It all comes back to that.
Yeah, no, to extend that out. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just so wonderful, and you can really feel that mm-hmm. energy and intention, I think, when being there. Yeah, it's so visceral, I mean, in my opinion. But we are coming to the end of the show. We have a couple of minutes left. Oh. It goes by very fast. Thank you again so much for being here. And these last couple of minutes, I was wondering if you had any upcoming news you'd like to share with listeners, and how can people find you?
People could find us on Instagram. We have a website, yesfolktonics.com. On Instagram, we're just yesfolk. And we're always, is always through Instagram, letting people know what we've got going on and what we're putting out. And there's always, you know, there's many more of all the things we were talking about today. There's a lot more of all of it coming. Yeah, we're excited to just keep growing the community.
Great. Yeah. And just with the last minute, I was wondering if you had any words of wisdom, any advice to share with prospective or fellow fermenters, perhaps even those considering starting their own fermentation focused business. In just 50 seconds.
I would say
just cover years of knowledge in 50 seconds.
Pretty much in a word, I would say perseverance. Mm-hmm. Both from the perspective of having any kind of small business, it's just like perseverance in the face of adversity and challenges. And also specifically with fermentation, you know,